This is the Let's Talk Wheels podcast.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios,
here's Matt Perrault and Mike Herzing.
Welcome to another edition of Let's Talk Wheels here on the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network. Mine is Matt Perrault, alongside Mike Herzing, back for another great episode. We got some cool things for you guys today, including a conversation about a new Hellcat. But Mike, you're in Houston. How are things?
Well, they're actually okay. It's when we got some little rain, but we had a lot of people that have been flooding, you know, and it happens here all the time. It happens in Vegas where you're at. Mm-hmm. When it rains a lot and the rain doesn't go away, there's just a lot of things that happen, and it's usually bad when it comes to cars.
Right. Well, let's talk a little bit about what some safety techniques or driving techniques that you may need to watch out for. So if you're in the path of one of these hurricanes, and there's two of them, and look at, they're going to be going up the East Coast, and mm-hmm. here in Vegas, I mean, last weekend there was a flash flood warning on both Saturday and Sunday due to, well, we're in monsoon season here in Las Vegas.
Right.
And that's just sort of, you know, once in a while, twice a year, we get about a 3-week, 4-week stretch of just really hard rain. And it, a lot of times it's so dry here that it's the upper altitudes that get it. Mm-hmm. But when it rains really high in the upper altitudes, as we know, water goes down. So gravity pulls the water down. So then you wind up having flash floods for folks who may not, you know, rain may not even be in the area. And all of a sudden there's this like wall of water that's coming down the mountain. So, mm-hmm. you know, what are one big keys? What's a really number one thing when it comes to driving is if you see water, what should you do?
Well, first of all, a lot of times we get caught in water that's curb deep, okay? And that's not usually a big issue unless you're having to go through a couple miles of curb deep water. And then you end up with wheel bearing problems because it washes the grease off. And what we used to see when I had my shop was we had people come in about 3 or 4 months later, 6 months later, and they needed a brake job. And we're like, she goes, I can't believe it. I don't need a brake job. I mean, this car is almost new, this or that. And I said, well, first of all, this is not covered by warranty on your vehicle. Ooh, what happens really? Is your brake calipers that squeeze down on the brake pad, just kind of like a bicycle where the brake pads are, they float. They move from left to right, and there's some lubricant that's on there, special high-temperature lubricant, that gets washed away. So what happens is your calipers will freeze, and then basically one pad is all that's stopping you on each side. And it causes for horrible uneven wear. Now, the brakes are going to be a little bit, quite not as good as, most people don't notice it. Just my brakes don't stop as good as they used to. Well, that's because they're frozen up. And what happens is, all of a sudden, those brakes that'll last 50,000 miles now last 5,000 miles.
Ooh.
And so it costs you money. Then again, if you go through too much water and you get water in the transmission, all the clutch plates inside your automatic transmission, any water hits them, which gets into the fluid, all the clutch material comes off. So you end up having to have a transmission overhaul. Differential and the rear end, whether if it's a front-wheel drive car, it's all part of the transaxle. But on a rear-wheel drive vehicle, if the differential gets wet, it's going to cause bearing problems and gear problems. So what I'm saying is you go through more water, it's going to cost you more money. Now, in Texas, you end up with underpasses seem to always fill with water. And I think they do that on purpose. That's a good place to store water. But they found that people would drive, couldn't see it, and they would just drive into 10 feet of water. So they started putting a rain gauge on each side of the underpass. So you can look up there and it says, you see where the water is, and it says 6. That means that's 6 feet of water they're getting ready to drive into, which is really not good.
No, I mean, look, I remember when I moved to Houston.
Yeah.
And when I started going under those underpasses and I saw the rain gauges, and I remember looking at my wife and being like, they can get 8 feet of water down here?
Sure.
Like, how did they get 8 feet of water? Now, look, I'm a kid from Boston who lived in Alabama in the Midwest, but I had never seen, you know, the amount of rain that can fall in Houston in a given hour. I mean, right. You can drop 3 or 4 inches and it's not that uncommon.
Now, easily.
Yeah, you put a hurricane into Houston, and we're talking, unfortunately. What was Harvey at one clip? Was it a foot an hour that it was dropping?
Something like that.
Point?
It was 51 inches, 61 inches, something like that. Parts of town that got 70 inches.
But
the point is there's nowhere for it to go when it rains that hard. So if you drive your vehicle, and heaven forbid you have to get stuck. I mean, if you're stuck, you're stuck. Get going. Okay, don't stop. Don't go too fast. Don't stop. Get to someplace. Stop. And if you've got insurance, you're going to have to call your insurance company. If you ever open the door and find your carpets are wet, People think, I've got my carpets wet, but I vacuumed it. Okay, cool. Except automotive carpets are not the same as your home carpets. It has a plastic backing. So you vacuum it. Underneath the carpet is a layer of insulation called jute. We call it jute, but it's basically insulation. That will stay wet. I don't care how much you vacuum it because of the plastic backing on the carpet. So what happens is people will just think, oh, I've got it good. And then about a week into it, it starts smelling really, really bad. And you can almost, it's like a smoker's car. You almost can't get the smell out of it. We used to immediately take the carpets out, immediately wash them down with Lysol and water and all that disinfectant, hang them up to dry, replace the insulation, and put it back together. Any connectors, I have to have dielectric grease put on them. You have to dry out all the connectors. If you have it, I had a person that had water in his car and was self-insured. He basically didn't buy comprehensive. And his floorboard got wet, and he had some of the computers mounted on the floor. Oh. I told him, don't do it. When the water's coming up, go in there and unhook the negative cable of the battery. So he unhooked the negative cable. So when the water got into the electronics, it wasn't much, but he got some water in it. I said, don't put any power to it. Don't try to start it. Leave the battery unconnected. He pulled the interior, got it all dried out. Like I said, he pulled the computers apart, blew out all the connectors, sprayed a little dielectric grease on some of the connectors, put it back together. Car ran fine.
Oh,
it wasn't a problem. Changed all his fluids. And he said, I was going to throw the car away. And he says, as long as you don't try to start it, you shouldn't do a lot of damage. Unhook the battery. And so now if you've got insurance and you just, you know, just call your insurance company and they'll fix it. But a lot of times on water damage now, because of the problem with all the connectors, any connector that gets wet, you know, 2 years later, it's going to have, some problems with the resistance in the connectors. And so the computer gets a funny signal. They have electrical problems forever. If you pull all the connectors apart, put them little dielectric grease, clean them all real good, put them back together, they're fine. But people don't do that. And so the main thing is stay out of it. But people think, I just drove through curb deep water. It was like, you know, halfway home and I drove for a couple, 2 or 3 miles. They think they're fine, but they're not necessarily are fine. So the brake problems and everything. So just take it to your shop. I went through water, take it to your shop, say, I went through this much water for this long. I don't care if you have a brand new car. Warranty doesn't cover that. Warranty covers something that breaks because it's the manufacturer's fault, not yours. Brakes are normal wear items. So they're going to do that. If you have drum brakes in the back and you stop. I had a customer one time pulled his Toyota truck, and they, you know, it was a Tacoma. It was only a few years old, and they have drum brakes. So he puts his parking brake on, walks in. 2 days later, after the storm leaves, he comes back and goes to move it. The brake shoes have rusted to the drum.
Huh.
And the wheels wouldn't turn. You could skid it down the street and the wheels wouldn't turn. We ended up having to heat the drums up to try to get them off. And eventually we ended up destroying the brake shoes and having to put drums on it. But it was a nightmare. So the strangest things happen when you have a lot of water. Water and automobiles don't go well together.
What's your recommendation in terms of you have a truck, right, or you know, a Jeep or something that can go through water, but you wind up getting it up to the door? Now, I mean, is it the same recommendation if your carpets? I mean, most Jeeps don't have carpet, but right. You know, some trucks do, I guess. What's your recommendation for a vehicle that's capable of going through water, but you get water potentially inside the vehicle?
Well, that happens a lot of times. Those vehicles, like a Jeep interior, are set up where you can hose it down with a garden hose.
Right.
So a lot of times they'll go up to 24, 30 inches, 32 inches of water without any problem. That's a stock Jeep, much less something that's gone up. Now, their differentials don't have a vent. They have a hose coming up. There's a vent up mounted real high. They're set up for high water. Then you're not going to have the damage that you're going to have normally. Now, you might have some damage with the brake calipers. They're usually sealed a little bit better because they're kind of designed for that type of abuse.
Right.
The best thing it is I've gone through some water. I've got a truck, I've got a Jeep, I've got whatever. Let me just go ahead and have it checked. It doesn't take anything for the tech to pull the wheels off when you're doing an oil change. And that you always want to check your fluids and make sure you don't have any water in them. Check your transmission fluid, check your differential, check those kind of things. You know, easily, the transmission, just pull the dipstick if you still have one. A lot of the newer vehicles, the Camrys and a lot of stuff, don't have dipsticks anymore. You got to take it to the shop and have them pull out an access plug and have them check the fluid level. Because if it has any water in it, it's transmission overhaul time. You can pay $60 to have them check it, or you can pay $6,000 for a transmission overhaul. Oof. It's up to you.
Well, also, I mean, one thing we want to stress here is that, you know, if there is standing water or running water, don't go through it. I mean, yes, in certain urban markets in the South and in Houston and Texas and Dallas.
You have to.
Yeah, and you have to. And also, there's, you know, there's gauges to tell you how high the water is. So they have planned for it more than if you're on a backcountry road and you think that, oh, it's only a couple of feet deep, and then all of a sudden you wind up getting washed away in your
right.
vehicle. You know, you're stuck in your car, you're calling 911, and you're saying, I'm in my car, and I'm in running water. So it's really dangerous. So if you can avoid it, and go around. I mean, you and I almost had
yes.
we were driving, we got caught in a horrific storm, and we were in a Jeep, and we decided to turn around and go the long way because we didn't know how deep the water was.
Right.
The water could have been, you know, 4, 5, 10 feet deep. We didn't know once we started, and once you get into running water, you can't get out of it unless you have some traction on the ground to be able to get through it. So it's better safe than sorry every time when it comes to standing water or running water when it comes to your vehicle. And even if you're in a capable truck, you know, SUV, whatever, that has the ability to do it, just know that you don't know how deep that water is really. And unless there's a gauge there, like in an urban setting, otherwise,
mm-hmm.
turn
yep.
around, right?
And I've also seen people that would get the water and somebody comes from the other direction and they're in a big truck and they're going faster than they should and it just swamps your vehicle. If it gets water into the intake, the engine won't compress water, so that ends up bending a rod. You know, ends up in the engine time. So yeah, that's the worst case scenario. I mean, it doesn't normally happen that way. Normally, people are smart, but that's kind of why when you're in an area like this, a lot of people drive pickup trucks, SUVs,
right.
and Jeeps. I mean, what is the number one Jeep market in the country is Boston because of all the snow. So
yep.
you've got to – I mean, it's just something that makes you feel good. I'm in a vehicle that's all-wheel drive or four-wheel drive. I've got some vehicle that will ford 25, 30 inches of water. It'll get me home. It, you know, so that's
yeah,
one
funny,
of the appeals.
When I grew up, it was funny because I'm from Boston. So when I grew up, if you had a Jeep, normally you were a beach person.
Right.
So you would rip the top down and you'd have it for the summertime months. If you drew, and it was a benefit, obviously, because of the wintertime, but, mm-hmm. you know, back then, Jeeps weren't as well insulated as they are now. And my high school girlfriend had a Jeep, and my goodness, it was cold to be in those things during the wintertime.
The old days when Jeeps were just
yes.
uncomfortable and everything. You put up with it because of their capability.
Exactly. I mean, I remember the hard top literally was just like a panel of plastic. Like, it wasn't,
yeah.
there was no insulation, there was nothing to keep you warm. It
right.
was absolutely freezing cold. So, you know, we had some fun experiences being, you know, up in the White Mountains with that Jeep, and it was like, okay, we're freezing. But the trucks, if you drove a truck where I grew up, you were normally somebody who plowed.
Right.
And you would throw a plow in the front of that, and you would go ahead and you'd go to work, and you'd make extra money on
mm-hmm.
the side because you'd go and dig out everybody from the snow. And, you know, the plows that were owned by the city or the town or the county, whatever, wherever you lived, you'd have to wait. So people would get stuck. So people who had trucks would oftentimes slap on a pretty big plow and then go around to the neighborhood and say, okay, you know, give me $5, $10, and I'll plow you out. I'll get you out. So those are always my experiences. And then I got to the South and I got down in the farm country in Iowa and Nebraska, and I was like, oh, that's what trucks are for.
Yeah.
So it was a cool learning. It was a cool little learning experience for me on that one.
Yeah, those are great. That's how I my first friend back in the 70s from Detroit had a genuine, the first gen Bronco. And
wow.
he had this weird bracket on the front with these two headlights sticking up. And I said, what the hell is that? He said, well, that's for a snow plow. We probably don't need it too much down here. But I need it in Detroit. I sold the plow, but I kept the mount. I said, okay. And then he explained it just like you did. And I went, oh,
yep.
sounds logical.
Yeah, it sounds logical because it really is. I mean, if anybody grows up, if you're listening in Detroit, we're on in Detroit, you're listening in the Northeast, you know what that feeling is in the morning when you come outside at 7 o'clock in the morning to go to work and there's a foot of snow on the ground.
Yeah.
And you have to either plow it yourself, shovel it yourself, or, you know, go get undressed, get your clothes on to be able to go and shovel out. You know, it's why people unfortunately have heart attacks, because they're not capable, they're not in enough shape to do that type of heavy lifting, but they got to go to work. So
yep.
they go ahead and just start, you know, attacking the snowplow, attacking the snowdrift, and they end up having a heart attack. So, you know, that was my experience growing up. And then I realized that, you know, as I got into different parts of the country, that You guys deal with water at high levels. New England deals with
snow,
snow in high levels. I deal with heat in high levels. Yeah. It was, you know,
and smoke.
And smoke now from the California fires. Yeah, it's been really a bad week air-wise here in Las Vegas for that reason. And I mean, it was 100, and it's been one of the hottest Julys and August on record, and August in particular, because it's been about 110 every day. So it's been quite warm here, here
tough.
In Las Vegas.
That's tough on vehicles, too. We have cooling systems. But either way, folks, if you have any car questions, anything like that, I got through some water, whatever, drop me a line at info@letstalkwheels.com, and we'll be glad to set you an answer, give you an answer, and a best guess.
Carl Aloy, Mike had a conversation with him about the Hellcat. It sounds like that thing's got even a bigger engine than what it had before.
Yep. It's like a Raptor copy. It's awesome.
Goodness, very cool. So we'll get to that coming up here on Let's Talk Wheels and our automotive reviews. And remember, on the podcast, you get the classic.com conversation with Jeremy Barenbaum every week here as part of the Let's Talk Wheels radio network.
Coming down in 3, 2, 1. Folks, this week, everybody's going to be jealous because I was driving the 2021 Chevrolet Suburban. And people think, that thing's so huge. It's really not. It doesn't drive that way. But the cool thing about it is, for 2021, they've redesigned this sucker. I mean, it is changed from the front to the back and for the better. People that own Suburbans just love them. I have friends that they've had two or three of them in their lifetimes, and they drive them about 300,000 miles and then move on to the next Suburban. They really wouldn't consider buying anything else. Same thing with the Tahoe or the Yukon or any of the other cousins of it. I can see why. Because it's so easy to drive. It's so great on the highway. I got a chance to pull a pretty heavy trailer with 5,000 pounds on it. It was great. Fuel economy didn't tank all that bad. What they've done is a lot of different things with the powertrains. Let's start with the chassis. First of all, it's longer. It's about 5 inches longer for the wheelbase, so it means it rides a little bit better. The body is only a couple of inches longer. It's not that much different. Interior-wise, because they've added independent rear suspension, it frees up. There's no rear axle there, so there's no hump for the third, right there where the third seat is. It's much more comfortable for the third seat. For the Tahoe, for example, it's 66% more room inside. It is huge. So, lots of room. I'm a tall person. I can actually sit in the third row seat and take a long trip and be okay. You can get this with about three different powertrains. They all have a 10-speed transmission. You can get it with which is going to be a big seller, a 3-liter Duramax turbo diesel, which I think on the pickup truck, I got about 33 miles to the gallon. So I imagine it would probably get close to that in the Suburban. That's going to be a big deal. You can get the V8 engines, you get the 5.3, or you can get the 6.2. The funny part is, on the highway, the 6.2 gets better fuel economy than the 5.3, and it has 420 horsepower. So this sucker will scoot. They've added a lot of safety and driver convenience things, all the technology. It's got all the airbags in the world. It's got the HD rear vision camera where the rearview mirror is, automatic emergency braking, forward collision alert, following distance indicator, front pedestrian braking, rear park assist. And that's sure, this is a big vehicle. It's got the cameras that come on. It's got the beepers that'll tell you when you pull up, when you're backing up. It's got the cross traffic alert. When you're getting too close to something as it's pulling up, camera comes on, says, hey, you're getting too close. It's got hitch guidance to help you pull up back up to your trailer, because a lot of the people will buy the Suburban. We're going to use it for towing trailers, and it is really great for that. I mean, I hate to gush too much about the vehicle, but if you drove it, you would too. It's got a nice big infotainment system, a 10-inch diagonal color touchscreen. It even has, you can even get it with a heads-up display that goes in the windshield. It's really kind of cool. The instrument cluster is very simple and clean. It's neat. And the heads-up display, by the way, is a 15-inch optional, and it's great. And it tells you everything much without having to take your eyes off the road. It's got a new rear seat media system, which is really space age. You got a 12.6-inch tablets basically on the back of the seats, and everybody in the back seat would be great. If you're into the technology, okay, everybody has the built-in Wi-Fi hotspots and things like that. But it also has Apple CarPlay and Android Auto wireless, okay?
which is really cool. Just to have your phone automatically go to Apple CarPlay or Android Auto without having to plug anything in. That's cool. It has a wireless charging spot there in the center console, which will actually work with a case around your phone, which is some of the problems I've run into. It drives great. It's quiet on the highway. It's comfortable. The seats are so adjustable. It's crazy. They got a couple little things that are really cool. They've got a little cubby hole in the dash that you can kind of hide things. There's places to put cubby holes all over the place to put things. Because when you're in one of these things, you end up living in it practically. Especially, I know a lot of people that use it for their work. And they travel a lot of the oil field guys and things like that, because it gets such great fuel economy on the highway. You know, if you get a two-wheel drive model, it's easy, not easy, but you can get 22 miles per gallon. Now, the one I drove was a Z71. It was four-wheel drive. And I think I got about 20 and a half, 21, which is better than I got on the Volkswagen Atlas I had the next week. So it was great. Like I said, it's quiet, comfortable. Pulling a trailer was no problem. I had a 5,000 pounds worth of trailer behind it. And it's just really cool when you plug in the trailer. It has all the sway controls and things like that, automatic. It also cycles through the lights, so you can make sure all your lights work. If you have a light that goes out, it'll tell you. You can even get it set up where you can put tire pressure monitors on your trailer, and it will tell you when you have a low tire on the trailer. That is so cool. It does have the rear seat alert where it says, hey, by the way, don't forget your phone, and you put something in the back seat, you better check it out. Chevrolet's been great about that. General Motors in all has been kind of like that. It's got the one I had at 20-inch wheels. You can get it on all these different trim levels, including the High Country. Now, that sucker is loaded with everything. Now, these things will start in the upper 50s, low 60s. The average one will probably be 65 or 68. The one I had was 70, over 78. It was loaded with everything. And I think that's just the way it is, you know, with these press vehicles. But it was easy to drive. It had magnetic ride control, but so did the independent rear suspension. And it had air suspension, which means if you're towing something, it'll automatically level out all four corners. If you've got the mother-in-law on the right side, you know, so the car leans a little bit. She's a big lady. And so that will actually make a big difference. It'll level that out for you. It had an awesome stereo system. It had, you know, because it's so quiet on the highway, the stereo sounds even better, but it had all these options. And rear media, nav package, which I wouldn't have gotten. That's $2,500 I wouldn't have spent. Because kids have their own tablets and things like that, and you've got a hotspot anyway. But the magnetic ride control and the off-road capability package, you want to go on off-road, it raises the body up, that kind of stuff. You know, when every time you stop, it'll drop down so you can get out of the vehicle easier. Driver information center and all the extra goodies. The adaptive suspension, it had a huge sunroof. That's another $1,500. The max trailering package, which has all the coolers and things like that, transmission temperature monitors and brake controllers and all that, that was $465, and that's definitely worth it. The hitch guidance and all the stuff, so it basically guides you to go put your trailer hitch. It's so nice to not have to have somebody in the back to guide you, and they're not paying attention, you bang into something. That's kind of handy. It had a really cool thing of a center console that you push this button and it slides back. Well, that means the people behind you can use the extra cup holders, but also you reach down and it's got a little drawer that opens up and you can put your wallet in there or your any type of handgun or something like that. Something you just want to make sure you keep it, your watch. If you want to go bicycling or something like that, you can close that, move the console back forward with a little button, and it just slides forward automatically. And nobody can get to it unless it's you when you have the key. So that's cool. Like I said, the second row seats would slide back forward and back. But they have so much more leg room in this model than the earlier models. And the other model had no problems. But it's really cool. If you're a tech guy or a lady and you like high-tech stuff, this is it. You like lots of room for kids and things like that. You want to go camping. You want to do whatever you want. You want to pull the trailer and all stuff. Suburban and Tahoe are just great. I like the Suburban personally. And the fact is it doesn't drive like it's as big as it is. It's actually bigger inside than the Expedition and things like that. So it's the leader in its class And there's a good reason for it. They last a long time. Like I said, you see these things with 300,000 miles on them all the time. I've got about five friends with over 300,000 miles on their Suburbans right now, and they just love them. Now, of course, once they see this, they're probably going to want to buy one of these. They're crazy expensive, but I think they're worth it. Check out the 2021 Suburban. I think you're going to really like all the changes GM has done.
Folks, this week Ram was in the news with their new TRX. I remember when they had the TRX as a fantasy vehicle, you know, concept. Well, it comes to life. It came to life. And we've got Carl Lally from Ram to talk about it. Carl, welcome to Let's Talk Wheels, big guy.
Hey, thanks. I appreciate it.
All right, that's TRX. Everybody's been questioning me about it. It's basically a Ram truck. Paper goes, oh, it's a Ram truck with a Hellcat engine. I said, well, it's a little more than that. So why don't you explain how much more?
Yeah, thanks, Mike. So definitely a little bit more than that. And you referenced that concept truck we did back in 2016. And as you recall, we revealed that truck at the State Fair of Texas. And the acclaim that we got from that truck was just incredible. I mean, people asking about it left and right. And it generally pushed us to say, okay, we need to do this truck the best possible way, not just stick an engine under the hood, but do it the appropriate way for true off-road performance. And so not only did we make it fast, but we made it full of technology and even some luxury features and just performance bits all around the truck to make it handle best in class, bar none.
All right. Now, it's real funny. You guys have the Power Wagon, which will get you anywhere. And if he gets stuck, it has the winch to pull you out and all that other stuff. That thing is slow and go. That's it. Okay. But I remember Ford has had so much luck with the Raptor. And then a lot of the Ford folks got a little bit ticked off when they took the V8 out of it and put the six-cylinder in it. Granted, it has 400 horsepower, and that's still okay. But it's just something about having a V8. And when you guys have done this, and then you've changed the suspension and made it wider and do all this other stuff, I think you, like, took the Raptor and went one better.
Well, we're not afraid of hearing you say that. You know, it was clear one of the messages we received when we did that concept truck was put the V8 in it.
Yeah.
I mean, customers were absolutely just completely enthused to see the V8 in it. So, yeah, 6.2-liter supercharged V8 is what we chose to put under the hood there. And what else can you say when you have 702 horsepower and 650 pound-feet of torque? I mean, it is just a monster.
Yeah, it really is. But I notice also that the track is, what, 8 inches wider? The suspension travel is longer? I mean, you really did it well.
Yeah, I mean, of course it's going to be fast. 0 to 60 in 4.5 seconds and 118 mile per hour top speed. But as you talked about, these new integrated fender flares adds over 8 inches of body width. Mm-hmm. So that helps kind of pull in those new specially designed 18-inch wheels that also have these 35-inch Wrangler Territory all-terrain tires that have a unique tread pattern designed for the TRX.
Mm-hmm.
So it really is. It's not just the engine, which is certainly enough to talk about on its own, but it's the entire package that makes this truck special.
Well, you know, you guys have really changed the whole market a few years ago when you came out with some of your nicer interiors. I guess Ryan Agoti and all those guys took care of it, and Ralph Giles, and they just did so much with you. And you've won every single award with that interior, even Luxury Car of the Year. On the Ram 1500 and 2500 and all that. So is this going to get that really cool interior?
Yeah, so what we did is we actually created three price classes within the TRX. We have our base trim level, then we have TR1 and TR2. And what that allows the customer to do is if they're just interested in pure performance, obviously that base model's got everything they need for them. And it's not exactly barren. It comes standard with our 12-inch Uconnect radio, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So there's plenty packed into that starting truck. But as you work your way up in these TR1 and TR2, you get into our Napa leather-covered interior surfaces, heated and ventilated seats front and rear. We have our all-new heads-up display available on the TRX, making its debut for Ram, which is really cool, even a digital rearview mirror. And so you can take all those neat technology and luxury features from, say, our Limited that, you know, has won tremendous accolades, as you pointed out, and you can have those embedded into this amazing performance machine.
Okay, now does it have all the cameras all around and things for the front camera and all those goodies?
Yeah, you can get that technology that flows right into that 12-inch Uconnect screen that I talked about, although we also have some things that you wouldn't find on our other trims, like the special performance pages.
Oh, okay.
You can cycle through 8 different drive modes, and it displays in crisp, high-definition color on that 12-inch radio, what's happening with the suspension system and the four-wheel drive system as you engage those different modes.
Well, you know, that's going to be really fun. I mean, the problem we're going to have right now is just making enough of them. You know, I've got a lot of friends that do a lot of construction work, and they'll do some off-road oil field stuff, and this is the exact vehicle they're looking for. You know, the Power Wagon's great, don't get me wrong, but they like something a little bit faster, and they like to go when they go a little bit good, something on the weekends. So they're going to really enjoy this thing. I know that the fuel economy is not important, but it is pretty streetable, isn't it?
Yeah, and so that's one of the things we've really tried to focus on as a brand. You mentioned the Power Wagon. That's long been the king of the hill in terms of just ultimate off-road pickup truck performance, crawling up the side of a mountain, if mm-hmm. you will, and doing all sorts of cool things. We have our Rebel, which really gives you that off-road lifted truck look straight from the factory that allows customers to kind of have a bit of a customized look right off the showroom floor. But clearly what we kept hearing was performance. Give me that performance. I want to go fast. I want to be able to have the ability to control myself when I'm going in a fast off-road environment, and that's where the TRX fits in. So we like to look at it as being that final piece that really cements us as the off-road truck brand leader.
Well, you know, having that good suspension, those big old tires and things, that probably helps around some of the potholes around Detroit, doesn't it?
Well, that's a big challenge in and of itself, but yeah, I suppose that's one of the test loops we should make sure it could check off the list for sure.
Well, you know, the Ram has just been rocking so much, and they've just done so well. And Mike and all the guys there have just worked so hard at this thing. You guys just never seem to stop. I mean, I'm sure you've been testing this thing for months and months, you know, with camouflage and all that other stuff, kind of giggling to yourself, I get to take this off-road, right?
Yeah, it was like the secret that we couldn't wait to tell.
Right. So
when we finally took the wrap off of this truck a week ago, it was just like a day that we had been excited about, kind of like little kids before a holiday or a birthday. You know, we were so excited to tell people about this truck because we'd have to keep it secret to ourselves here for so long. But yeah, it was just tremendous fun. Any opportunity that we had to get behind even one of the test mules and, you know, at our proving grounds and try this truck out, people jumped at it because it's just so much fun to drive.
You know, I've been to the proving grounds and I've been on those courses, and I just think that'd be perfect for that. But I mean, this is something that's pretty specialized. I mean, it's a little bit wider, so some of these trails, you know, if you're going slow, this kind of trails is not really for that too much. You can make it, don't get me wrong, but I think when you get out there where Matt is, my radio partner in Vegas, and out in the mountains there at West Texas and things like that, that thing will really shine.
Yeah, it's going to fly in those off-road environments for sure. I mean, it's got 13 inches of front wheel travel, 14 inches of rear wheel travel, which is basically 40% more than a typical Ram 1500, mm-hmm. a 2.5-inch higher ride height. It's got best-in-class brake rotor size. So you're able to control that performance and bring it to a halt when you need to. And yes, it'll climb over rocks and boulders and do that kind of slow crawling type of thing. But when you have the opportunity to stretch its legs and get out into some of these more desert kind of environments, that's where you're really going to feel this truck take off. And it's amazingly drivable on pavement. We joke that its natural habitat is not pavement. It's actually off the pavement. But you drive the truck on the pavement, and it's not going to be punishing at all. You're going to be enjoying all that technology and those luxury features that we talked about earlier.
Yeah, folks, we're talking to Carl Lally from Ram and the new TRX Ram 1500. Carl, I mean, this thing has just been obviously exactly what everybody's been asking for. People have been wanting. I guess I've got a neighbor that I talked to, showed her about the a Rebel I was driving, and she went out and bought a really pretty red Rebel. Missy loves her Rebel. She wouldn't want anything but that. I mean, and she comes from a Ford family, so that was real funny. But it's just amazing how people will just fall in love with these trucks. They name them. They do all these things, and it's so neat. It's kind of like having a version of a Jeep. You know, it's like a cult.
Yeah. No, it's been a lot of fun to really watch the Ram brand grow over the course of the last decade. As you remember, Mike, it was back about mm-hmm. just over 10 years ago when we separated Ram from Dodge and charted right. our own course here as a standalone brand. And I think a lot of people questioned at the time, you know, why are you doing that? A lot of auto companies were going in a different direction. And it was because we had this passion and this dedication to building a truck brand that was focused solely on making those people happy and creating that kind of passion, that kind of love that you talk about. And I think we're seeing the fruit of that labor. We've got the highest loyalty in the segment when it comes to half-ton pickup trucks. More people are switching out of our competitors than ever before, so we're gaining customers and gaining market share. And it's just fun to start to perpetuate that now by bringing these new trucks to market like the TRX that just gives just one further passion or pride point to the brand.
Well, you know, I know when Fred Diaz started all this way back in the old days, and good old Fred San Antonio boy, and then it passed it on to Jim Morrison, and now Jim has gone over the Jeep, and now Mike Koval's there. Everything is just very contiguous. Everything just works. It just flows. And it really shows when you look at your vehicles that you guys love what you're doing. And every time you find something that you want to change, you guys put it in the list. And whenever there's a model change, you add it to it. And this is the TRX is the exact example of that.
Yeah, I sometimes joke that we're a bunch of truck nerds. You know, whether it's brand marketing or engineering folks, design, of course, and then our product planning, we all have this love for this brand and for these trucks. And so when we have different ideas, we challenge each other in a fun, productive way. We kind of test each other's limits to figure out what is that next piece of this truck market that we need to go attack, or that we need to make better, or that we need to do something a little bit different. And it's a fun environment to work in, and our leadership has been great about encouraging that and just giving us the opportunity to go out and do it.
Yeah, no kidding. You guys have really done well. Now, where can we find out more information about this vehicle?
So certainly ram.com/TRX. If you need to go directly there, we'll get you there. It's an all-new site for us, a new page, I should say, on our website that lets you scroll through from top to bottom and find out everything about this truck, from the interior, the exterior, the performance bits, all the technical specs. You can soak it all in there for sure.
And we can build one online, right?
Yeah, we launched the build and price tool the day that that we took the wraps off the truck a week ago, so you can go spec out all the different variations that you like and fantasize about. And we're looking forward to start building this truck here in the fourth quarter of this year, and you'll start seeing them on dealer lots before the year is out.
Oh, that's one of my next question is, when the dealer's going to get them before the year's out? Wow, that's it's going to make it here pretty quick, and I guess there's going to be some Mopar parts on it too, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's been really cool too, because this is a great portfolio for Mopar to sink their hooks into and come up with some neat things to do. So you see things like the available beadlock wheels and the Ram bar that you can order, and it's even set up
a bar.
So
I mean, like I can sit there and make margaritas. Not that kind of bar.
Not that kind of bar. Not that kind of bar, Mike.
but a nice
bar that mounts on the bed behind the cab there that you can mount lights to and things of that nature. And the great thing about having that Mopar division in-house is they design it to fit exactly on the truck. So they know all the specs. It's designed to meet all the standards that the truck is held up to as well. So, yeah, you can have some fun customizing even though it comes straight from the factory.
Well, even though that means it's covered under warranty.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. It's an advantage we have, and it looks great too.
All right, Carl, thanks for joining. Let's Talk Wheels today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
All right, folks, that was Carl Lally from Ram talking about the TRX. We got a lot more right after this.
Time for my review of a 2020 Volkswagen SUV that my wife simply loved. This was my first time driving an Atlas Cross Sport. Now, this vehicle comes in at a price tag at about $31,000 on its base. We had it with the SEL model, which was up to $40,000. You can get this a bit below that, but I mean, it was really a nice, nice ride. My wife likes a very heavy vehicle. I want a V6, which was really powerful. That's what we had. It adds about $1,400 for this. The all-wheel drive system is a little bit pricey, add about $2,000 onto this. But I was really, really impressed with this vehicle because it had a 3.6-liter V6. I had it in the two-row, not the three-row. So Atlas Cross Sport, you know, you can get it where you get the full, the Atlas, you know, the Atlas, but the Cross Sport gives you that two rows in a big, big, big space in the back for you to whatever you want to put back there. It is incredible storage in this vehicle, but it looked sharp. I don't think I would take this vehicle off-roading. I'm not sure it's so much, it would do some light off-roading, but I don't think I wouldn't do what I've done with the Telluride. How about that? It's in the same category. I put it in the more like the Hyundai Palisade type of vehicle where you're kind of, you know, it's a driver. It's not an off-road vehicle. But This is a German-engineered vehicle that feels really nice to drive. It's very stylish, great cargo space, tons of space in the back. I think it's, you know, it's a good option for anybody looking at an SUV that is not your cookie-cutter type of vehicle. The engine goes. I mean, it moves, and I was really impressed with the get-up-and-go for this. It's got a lot of sporty dynamics to it. It feels really tight around the corners. Okay, gas mileage, not great. You know, 22, 23, 24, somewhere in that range what I was getting. But my biggest complaint is Volkswagen's CarNet connectivity app. It's okay. I found it a little bit complicated. The Apple CarPlay and the Android Auto, I used the Apple CarPlay on it. It kept on going in and out. And this is, I've had Volkswagens before, and their tech packages kind of frustrate me. They're a little bit complicated. They're a little bit difficult to figure out. But that's my only complaint for this vehicle, because it did everything I asked it to do. It's got a ton of room. It's really spacious. It feels really roomy, very luxurious. You have standard automated emergency braking with forward collision warning, which was great. Standard blind spot monitoring with rear cross traffic alert, which was awesome. I really felt like the vehicle was very safe. The warranty is good, 4 years, 50,000 miles, although that's a little bit behind some of the others in this class, clearly. But it stands out. It's gorgeous. It's a really pretty vehicle to look at. The sight lines are great. The grille is very sporty looking. Headlights are really cool looking. I definitely recommend this vehicle. I would drive this. I would see it. I would sit in it. I would drive it. Some of the things on the interior I'm not a huge fan of. The knobs on Volkswagens are always so small. I don't know why they do that, but this had a bunch of USB ports in it, which is always really a key. I got to look at that. For me, it's very important. So, I mean, I think this thing, for a vehicle just under $40,000, and you can soup it up too. You can go all the way up to the R line where you get sort of a sport performance engine type at nearly $50,000. So you can do that. I would not get it in the S model. I would try to get it in the SEL, because that's the model that I drove. But I think it was bang for the buck. It was really, really fun to drive. And I would definitely, if you're looking for a midsize SUV, it's a little bit on the big side. It's big for a midsize SUV, but it's worth it. It's really fun. It's really nice. Check out the 2020 Volkswagen Atlas Cross Sport in the SEL model if you can afford it, because I think it's really, really worth it.
More to come on the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network.
Okay, folks, this is the part of the podcast that I really enjoy. We get a chance to talk to Jeremy Barenbaum from Classic.com, CLASIQ, as I always have to say. Jeremy, what's going on this week, buddy?
Hey, not too much. Just hanging out, ready to talk cars with you.
Are you in San Francisco or Los Angeles?
I am in San Francisco. The air quality is pretty terrible up here. We got, I don't know if you heard, we have like something like 300 fires burning this whole past week, and recently they've gotten some under control, but it was pretty smoky all week.
Oh, that's pretty bad. All right, now let's get to some car questions. We've had some people that email some questions during the week about engines on, you and I were talking about this last night, engines on, you know, Oldsmobile, Pontiac, Chevy. Now, I didn't realize that the engines back in the 60s and 70s, a lot of them were different, you know, and then Ford and Lincoln, so Ford or Mercury.
Yeah, so I didn't really have a ton of knowledge in this either, and then you kind of brought it up, and I called a friend, and we started talking about it, and I found it really interesting about the idea of these corporate engines, you know, Ford, Mercury, and then in GM, you have Oldsmobile, Buick, and General Motors, or Chevrolet itself. Each one of those cars had a different motor, and it was kind of dependent on the brand manufacturer. So, like, when you look at Ford and Mercury always got a little bit nicer motor, had a little bit more horsepower. You could get a 460 motor in a Mercury, but you could never order it for a Ford.
Oh, okay.
Now, Mercury had, like, their MEL engines, which was called Mercury, Edsel, Lincoln, and those motors were dedicated to those three brands. Ooh. Versus Ford had the FE engines, which were Ford Edsel corporate engines. Those were dedicated to Ford and Edsel cars.
Wow.
And, you know, because Mercury and Lincoln were considered the high-end brand for Ford, they got, you know, the higher treatment engines.
Wow. I never thought about that, because nowadays they're all basically the same. You know, you get a 5.3 GM, and it's pretty much across the board. Unless, of course, it's got different options on it. But back, I wonder when I guess this started even before, remember when General Motors bought all these brands and things like that. So I guess they just kind of left them alone. But, somebody asked, the reason is people had written in going, is it going to hurt the value if I take my Oldsmobile, I think it was a Cutlass or even, I can't remember if it was an older vehicle, and he had a 58 and then had something like about a 68, and he said, I want to put a Chevy engine in them. And I was like, a small block, and I was like, thinking to myself, it's going to be the same. But after talking to you, I realized they're not.
Yeah, I mean, and then we start going into Oldsmobile, Buick, and Chevrolet all had their own engines. Like if you look at a Chevy motor, it's painted orange for the most part. Buick motors were painted gold, or excuse me, like that teal, green, blue, and mm-hmm. Oldsmobile motors were painted gold. Along with that, each motor had their own design, their own transmission, their own, whole nomenclature behind it. Oldsmobile had the Rocket 88 motors, and they were painted gold. They had a different design than same year Buick motors, which were the Nailhead, which had, they were named after the tiny heads that they had. The valves were so small, people thought they looked like nails.
Well,
And some of that didn't change until the 70s. So, you had different transmissions going with different engine packages because the car was a Buick versus an Oldsmobile. Hmm. And then, even in Chevy, you have the Power Glide transmission that was in the 50s is a two-speed transmission, and then you slowly get to the Turbo Glide in the late 50s, and then not until the late 60s when you get the turbo hydromatic three-speed transmission, which is what is considered, like three-speed auto transmission that's in a lot of the late 60s, early 70s cars. Those are changed car to car and model to model, so it's a little bit different. For each car. So it makes it hard when you say, Chevy made General Motors made so many cars, I can just take a motor out of one or parts out of another and swap it. It's not always as easy as it sounds.
Well, your body parts aren't all that different. They always had a different front and back to them. But, that was back in the days where you could look at a year model, see the car driving up, and you knew what year model it was. Now you kind of have an idea within about 5 or 6 years. But other than that, you really don't know. But think how much more money it costs them to produce all these different parts.
Yeah, but one thing I found interesting in my research was looking at Cadillac, which is kind of, the top of the brand for General Motors. Mm-hmm. I started noticing that occasionally you would see a motor and transmission package that would show up in an Oldsmobile car the year before, and then the following year would be in a Cadillac. So Oldsmobile was the first car that had overhead valves in the motor. The next year, Cadillac got overhead valves in the motor instead of a flathead. So it's kind of interesting to see where the development went and how they did it. Maybe, I'm not privy to that information, but maybe it was, hey, let's try it in the Oldsmobile because we have to knock out a home run in the Cadillac. You don't want to put a Cadillac out on the market that's not Cadillac material.
I remember in the old days, Cadillac used to haul butt. I mean, they were fast cars and they were all luxurious and, all the movers and shakers, in the 50s and 60s all drove Cadillacs because they were, bad boys. But now I see why.
Yeah, and we don't get shared motors until mid-70s, late-70s, where Oldsmobile and Buick would be sharing the same motor, or Cadillac is getting the same motor as another General Motors car. Before then, it was kind of left to each brand manufacturer to come up with their own design, casting, and, it was all its own car.
Okay, now let's go back and backtrack a little bit. Let's say I'm going to go out and buy, a 58 Chevy. And I'm looking at it, and let's say, how do I tell if it's got the right engine or not? You know what I mean? I mean, that's what my whole point. Because, we're talking a lot of, you get vehicles, 40 and 50 years old, a lot of changes have been made. And so the odds of it having the original stuff are probably slim, and not everybody's going to pull it out and just say, I'm just going to, have the motor rebuilt and put back in. A lot of times people are going to talk about that. And I know that there's somebody talking about the fact that you have numbers matching vehicle. Does that help the value?
Oh, definitely. Depending on what kind of vehicle it is. When it's numbers matching, it usually is desirable because that's the way it left the showroom floor. And some people really like that idea.
Explain to people what numbers matching means.
That just means that the numbers that are on the motor, the transmission, the body, and the parts are all made within a similar time period of the car. So some cars, when you say numbers matching, it is the fact that the actual numbers on the motor will match the numbers on the body. Some manufacturers didn't have that accurate of building processes in the 50s and 60s, sometimes in the 40s even too, where a motor might have a number sequence that a correct month period, and that month will go with the car that was built in that month, and that would be considered numbers matching versus something that is a little bit more not correct, but some manufacturers literally have the same number on the motor, which is the same number on the transmission, and then it's shown on the car that that belongs with that car.
Okay, but also, you know, you think the fact that, I've got a – I think we're probably going to be more likely to, see a Pontiac or an Oldsmobile or a Cadillac or something like that with a, you know, Chevy engine like right now, the crate motor, rather than that. Now, the engines normally would bolt in and stuff, wouldn't they?
Yeah, they would still have the same bolt patterns, but, you know, because the transmissions were different, there would be a different housing so that they could – bolt up to each other.
Folks, we're talking to Jeremy Birnbaum from Classic.com, and we're explaining about these because the years. Now, what are the years, they say? So basically, it's everything before the late 70s?
Is when they started sharing between across the same brands. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you might see a Buick or an Oldsmobile or a Chevy with the same motor. Not till the late 70s. Before that, each of the manufacturers was kind of building their own engines and their own styles.
Wow. I mean, different intakes, different, because actually they were almost really competing against each other, where nowadays they really have defined goals. You know what I mean? The brands are, you know, Buick is this, and they don't have the performance brand anymore. I guess it's, I would think, you know, what do you think would be GM's performance brand now?
I don't know if they would have it. You know, GM has the GMC line is the more, you know,
right,
that's luxury line, and then we go to Cadillac. It's kind of the high end of it.
Yeah,
but in terms of performance, I still think Chevy is the one that holds those performance cars with the, you know, the Corvette and the Camaro.
Because I've heard people say, well, I've got an Oldsmobile or I've got a Pontiac engine, so it really runs good. And I was like, okay, and now I understand why. This is kind of interesting stuff, but it also makes a difference when you go to buy it. You got to make sure it has the right engine and transmission,
and
powertrain.
That's, you know, you going off of the guy that's selling the car. Hopefully, he's being honest and cool with you and telling you straight up what's in the car. But a lot of times, you know, you'll see people, they'll take things because, hey, it runs better if you do this, or it's easier to tune if I did that. So you got those type of changes that are done car to car and owner to owner are a little bit different.
You know, I remember the days when people said, I've got some Oldsmobile heads on here and this is how it runs better. Or I just remember that little things like I know the guys used to take the GM. Remember when GM made that diesel that was a 350 that was basically a gas engine. They modified to diesel and it didn't really hold up. Remember those?
Yeah.
Those had a stronger block, and I remember people used to say, I could build that into a hot rod. It works really well. And I'm like, okay. I mean, these people will do all kinds of things. I mean, it's really all about ingenuity and about modification. Because I remember people say, oh, look at that. That's got Oldsmobile heads on it. Oh, okay. I didn't know how they knew, but those guys knew that. This is part of the classic car business I don't know a whole lot about. And I'm learning, though, so thanks to you.
Yeah. Even one of the facts I read was Mercury's to Ford's, if they're the same model of the same year, the Mercury car might be 2 to 3 inches longer just to fit for the bigger size motor that they'd be putting in the car.
Yeah, Mercury's used to be, you know, they were bad boy cars. I mean, they were fast and they were, you know, you hear all the songs, you know, remember the, let's see, what is it, Hot Rod Lincoln? Remember that song?
Yeah.
Those things were, and they were crazy fast. And I think Cadillacs were right up there too. And it was just, those are the good old days, man.
I can only relive it through what I'm being told and what am I experiencing now, unfortunately.
Yeah, so then you go from all those hot rods to a VW mini, you know, microbus or something, and then it's all down the toilet after that, you know.
Sure.
We got Volvo 1600s and all that stuff, you know, and all of a sudden, wait a minute. What happened to the legendary stuff? I mean, hanging around at the Princess Drive-In and that kind of stuff. So all right, man. So that's been a great thing. So any your site's going to come back up in the next week or so?
Yeah, we're still working on it. It's going to be back soon. So hopefully, yeah, in the next week or two, I can share with everyone that it's live and everyone can check it out.
All right, folks. Now, Jeremy, we've got some more questions I'm going to give you for this week. And that way we'll talk to you about that I'll send you those tonight. And so, folks, don't forget, anybody has a car question, just go to letstalkwheels.com, hit the contact mic button, or email me at info@letstalkwheels.com, and I'm going to work to get everybody an answer. I don't care if it's classic, new, whatever. Whatever you need, we'll take care of it. And Jeremy is who I'll go to for all the classic car stuff. Folks, remember, you can find us on our website, letstalkwheels.com. You can find us on Facebook, on Instagram. Please, please tell your friends about the podcast and ask them to subscribe. We sure appreciate it. So, on behalf of Matt Perrault, Jeremy Barenbaum, our producer, Jack McCraw, and myself, I want to thank you for joining us today on the Let's Talk Wheels radio podcast. So, I'm Mike Herzing. Happy motoring.